We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
We got a bunch of different sports to talk about for once, and we can feel like it's a little normal on a Memorial Day edition of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course your smart speakers. You can just tell them to play the show and they'll do it. I'm Jason Fitz in for all the guys. We're doing something different today on a Memorial Day edition of the show. We're going to have different guests join us throughout the course of the morning, have fun conversation. We'll talk to some of the best from ESPN throughout the course of the day, and we'll get our thoughts as we go through the course of it. Before we get to any of it, though, I do want to say, it's Memorial Day, and I know it doesn't feel like Memorial Day in a pandemic world. I understand that these times feel difficult for everybody, and this is going to be a particularly strange day for so many people that are used to cooking out, having big events, hanging out with people in a world where so many of us are still distancing. So I just want to say, remember what today's about, and remember the importance of today, and find a moment of joy, because it is Memorial Day, and this is a day to say thanks and celebrate, and also to honor so many people that have given so much for us to be where we are today. So try and find the way to find a little normal through all of it, and thanks to everybody, the people that are braver, better, stronger, that have gotten us to where we are today. I say that every time we have a Memorial Day show, and I want to say it again. So, Golic and Wingo, we're going to do things a little different. Jason Fitz, again, in for Mike and Mike Jr. and Trey. And we're starting off with Buster Olney as the co-host for the beginning of the show. Buster, good morning. Happy Memorial Day. How you doing, my friend?
I'm hanging in there, Fitzy. How are you doing?
Man, I'm so good. And we've got a lot to get to. There was some golf yesterday. I'm not usually a golf guy. I was riveted by it. We'll get to that in a minute. But last night, I stayed up late to watch the premiere edition of Lance, the new documentary. We were waiting for the next Last Dance. Now we get Lance, the peek behind the curtain at Lance Armstrong and sort of the legacy of Lance. And I'm curious your thoughts, man, because I kept watching it last night thinking, how unlikable Lance Armstrong can be and felt like he was to me in the beginning of this. I couldn't find a reason to really root for the guy through the course of the beginning of the episode. Maybe I won't, but it just felt like there was this void wanting some level of positivity from it. And all I saw was sort of a guy that comes off a little harsh and frankly, not the type of guy I want to bump elbows with right now.
And Jason, that's exactly who he is, which is why I loved it. I thought it was absolutely dead honest, a forensic look into how it was that Lance Armstrong got his place in history. And at one point early in the piece, you know, he says, you know, this is my truth. And then he caught himself. He said, no, this is the truth. And it felt like that's what this was, because not only did we hear from Lance Armstrong, it wasn't, you know, just the events through his eyes, but even all the people who he challenged and he attacked during this, what happened with him, and that's why I absolutely loved it. And you know, it's interesting. My 15-year-old son misheard me refer to it as a documentary, and I said, you know what? That's perfect. What we got in The Last Dance was a documentary. It was the Jordan memoirs. This is a documentary, and if you want to understand why Lance Armstrong took the path that he did, I feel like we're getting an insight into that.
Well, I mean, I guess I would say it started aggressively, and which was eye-opening for anybody that, like me, that's, you know, I remember last year walking around College Game Day, and we were doing this digital show before game day, and it was me and Maria Taylor, and I always have to walk up and down the gate with all the students and say, hey, if you wouldn't say it to Mickey Mouse, you can't say it to us because we're live on air, and you're always worried that somebody's going to say the wrong thing. And then we got some just naughty language out of the gates, Buster. I was laughing in the house. I'm like, is there a counter going on how many times an F-bomb can be dropped at the beginning of a documentary? But I think the important part was they were immediately setting some sort of a tone, right? Like they were basically coming in and saying, this is going to be abrasive, it's going to be harsh, and it's going to be the truth. But I have to have some level of, I don't know, a good guy to it, some level of like, some level of root for in it. And I walked away from it saying I felt like Lance Armstrong is just matter of fact, and you know, anybody that's married knows it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And even when he was talking about it, I was like, yep, I did it. There was very, very contrite, very, very matter of fact. And there wasn't this tone of anything that really drew me to him. I if anything, I felt like he was sort of walls up and abrasive and aggressive, and I just didn't expect that from somebody that has the cheating legacy he has.
I kind of loved it because I think that's who he is. As it turned out, when we look back at it, that person who spoke and very when he was being accused and he would speak very defensively and defiantly, that was fake. What we got in the first episode was Lance Armstrong unvarnished. And while you would certainly want to like him, I don't think he's very likable. I think that he's so competitive that he's not likable. And that the fact that he was so competitive, I think, as was acknowledged in the piece, absolutely drove him to cheat. And I, you know, it's interesting because certainly there have been a lot of baseball players who've been caught up in the PED scandals through the years. And I'm still waiting for someone to come out and absolutely lay it brick by brick. Here's why I made this decision. Here's why I cheated in this spot. This is what drove me. And that's what I felt like we got from Lance Armstrong.
Well, and that's a fair point, by the way. Buster Olney, you can check out the Baseball Tonight podcast. And I wanted to ask your sort of comparison to that, because I think there's a real conversation here about some of the tone of the Lance documentary in the beginning was, yeah, I cheated, but everybody was doing it. And that made me immediately think of how an entire era of baseball players are going to and have been defending sort of some of their own scandal and cheating. We hear it every single time. I feel like there's a cheating scandal of any sort in Major League Baseball. The echoed sentiment is, well, we were doing it, but everybody else was too. We just got caught. So how should cheaters in these situations? I mean, I just don't know how somebody can come out of it and look clean without some level of, it doesn't matter what everybody else did. I did it and it was wrong and I never should have. And I don't feel like we get that from Lance. I don't feel like we get that from Major League Baseball, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah, and I still, you know, wonder if we're going to hear more of that as we move forward. But I kind of like, there was a moment where, and I can't remember who they cut away to, but it might have been another cyclist, and they talked about, yeah, the use of EPO. Basically what that is, that's a manifestation, and I'm paraphrasing here, of someone who's willing to cheat and do whatever they can to win. And that's said about Lance Armstrong in this documentary. That's where he was. And I think that while I agree with you that you want everyone to take full responsibility, I do think context is important. You know, every year when we have the Hall of Fame conversation, when we talk about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, I feel like that when we focus just on two names or on a Mark McGwire, that it's taken out of context. Yes, it was rampant. And yes, it's 100% true that in cycling, the cheating was absolutely rampant. And what I feel like you get an understanding of in this piece is how it was that Lance Armstrong and why it was that he bought into this.
Well, and that's, again, I think one thing that really hit me, other than that cyclists, by the way, are still in great shape. I mean, good Lord, they all looked phenomenal. I'm looking at all of them across the board thinking, good Lord. But the other part of it is, you're right. Like, it was so rampant that it was a little staggering to me that everybody was so open about, hey, yep, this is how it started. This is what we were doing. This is what everybody was doing. And, you know, at that point, at least there's nobody that's coming out, Buster, saying we had nothing to do with it. We're just getting rolling. If you're just tuning in, it's an interesting version of Golic and Wingo. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Jason Fitz in for the guys, and we're going to have different co-hosts. Buster, I'm going to get Buster to stick around because there was something other than Lance yesterday, and it was the golf course. And I'm telling you, if you listen to the show at all, you know I'm not usually a super golf guy, but I was riveted yesterday, and I got to get Buster's thoughts on the trash talking that we saw yesterday and what sort of is all going to draw us back after an incredible day for golf. We're going to get to all of that coming up.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
At this point, what threatens the return of the game more? Is it the virus or is it money?
The owners are probably going to lose more in the end than the players do.
The owner's saying, we need rollbacks because we're going to lose so much money.
If there's not a deal here, it is the beginning of a war.
We have to have complete collaboration between the union and the owners.
When the leverage pendulum switches back, the owners become it.
It's a happy Memorial Day edition of Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz in for all of the guys. I mean, Mike Jr., Trey, they're all getting the day off. We're going to do some fun stuff over the course of the morning with different co-hosts joining us throughout the course of the morning. We've been talking to Buster Olney, who's hanging out with us now. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And by the way, if you're like Buster and me, you're missing baseball, tune in for MLB Classic Tripleheader. Game 1 of the 2015 World Series, Game 2 of the 2017 World Series, and Game 3 of the 2018 World Series, all presented by Progressive Insurance. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. So, yesterday, Buster, in addition to Lance, the other thing that we got was a cool moment from golf. And I'm not a big golf guy, as everybody knows, but I was riveted yesterday watching everybody mic'd up, watching this sort of tandem as the duos win at each other, with seeing some human element of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and seeing the guys struggle at times but also hit beautiful shots at times. I thought it was a massive win for golf, though, because they experimented with something, and that's what, in my mind, everybody should be doing right now. They experimented with mic'ing people up and having real conversation between the commentators and the golfers together, and it just absolutely drew me in watching it. It felt like a total different experience than normal for me watching golf.
100%. You know, the highlight of the moment, I think you would agree with me, was when Charles Barkley was riding Tom Brady for a bad shot. And you could see Brady was annoyed, and so then when he makes a birdie, he goes right back at Barkley. And having the microphones there and having a window into that competitiveness and that, you know, that trash talk was absolutely awesome. And look, in the first week of March, before baseball got shut down, we had the all-access week on ESPN, and the fans loved that. But also players loved it. Players I talked to in the days after that, they loved it. And at some point, whenever baseball comes back, I think it'll be part of it, and we got some insight yesterday into why that is.
Well, and with that being said, I mean, to me, Buster, there's real opportunity. And I know that sounds weird. Obviously, a pandemic doesn't create opportunity. But when you're talking about shortened seasons or different playoffs across the sporting world, when you're talking about bringing things back and making them look different anyway, they're going to look different. Why not use this opportunity to experiment, to try new things? You know, why not? Every commissioner, to me, of every sport should have been watching yesterday saying, okay, let's put that on the list of things we're going to try. Because in my mind, the sports world is so starved for content that when things come back, they'll be thankful for it, and they'll be more, let's say, more open to accepting new things, especially in a Major League Baseball world where the fans, we all know, are so, you know, rigid in what they expect and what they want. This is, I think, a rare opportunity where that fan base might be a little more open to new things, different things, and change.
Early in the shutdown, a baseball executive said something to me, which I think he was absolutely dead on, that when baseball comes back, it has a chance to rebrand itself. You know, in recent years, we've heard from Rod Manfred and other people in the sport about how they're trying to connect to a younger audience. And after that All Access Week, when Freddie Freeman, took that, narrated that trip around the bases on that pop-up that fell in front of the center fielder, my 15-year-old son, Jake, said to me, he said, I would watch that. Because he's more like a lot of his peers, where he finds baseball, the idea of sitting and watching 3 hours, to be unworkable. Well, you know what? If you begin to use those tools you have, you begin to use the microphones. I agree with you. There's an opportunity there, and, you know, we'll just have to wait and see whether or not baseball actually takes advantage of it.
So well said that, you know, there's an opportunity to get younger, because that's what I think golf did. It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. Jason Fitz, Buster Olney hanging out right now on the Memorial Day edition of the show. And you said if and when, and I got to ask you, is our baseball great minds are all trying to figure out what it looks like. Where are we on the return of baseball?
There is cautious optimism among the moderates that I speak to, where they feel like that there's become a recognition on both sides. Look, we have to get a deal, because the idea of not having baseball in 2020 and essentially being off the radar for 17, 18 months is unthinkable. And here's the other reason why, that, you know, through the statements we've seen from the union, from Tony Clark, you know, what Scott Boras has been saying, Blake Snell, through the owners leaking information that seemingly, you know, puts pressure on the players, I think it's created this narrative that would be really destructive for baseball if they don't play. And that is, well, you know what, these millionaires and billionaires couldn't figure it out, so they just bypassed the season. That baseball can't let that happen. We've been wondering, how are they going to work out some kind of a negotiation? You know, maybe it comes down to guaranteeing the players a percentage of the salary, the prorated salary that they would make. But the two sides have to find a middle ground to get back on the field if they have an opportunity. And, you know, we'll see if it actually works with the safety protocol, if they can keep people healthy. But they have to at least try to bypass that narrative that I talked about.
Well, Buster, I mean, you just mentioned the safety protocol. To me, that's, I think, the craziest part of all of this, is that the protocols, if you go through and read some of what they're asking players to not do for a sport that is so, it's so repetition, right? You know, it matters. Routine matters. And then you think about asking players to come in and just not even throw the ball around at different times. And, you know, asking them to handle their lives so much differently. It's amazing to me that the conversation shifted to money, when I think there is a real conversation to have about how realistic it is players can actually maintain within the rules that Major League Baseball is trying to have them play within.
Hey, Jason, I do think that no matter what they come up with, you are going to hear about players who are not going to participate. I'm hearing that a lot from agents, you know, talking to clients, where they feel like that, whether it's underlying health concerns. You know, last week we heard from Carlos Carrasco, the Indians pitcher who was treated for leukemia last year, who says, if there's baseball, I'm going to participate. You can bet that the other players will make a different decision. But I think that if, in fact, that they're able to work out the money, I think the players will work through the protocol. You know, that things like not showering at the ballpark. I read some person say that it was like the old American Legion baseball, where you showed up in your uniform in your car, and then you got back in your car afterward and went home. It might be a lot like that. There might have to be some adjustments, but I think everyone's going to recognize, look, these are things that we're going to have to try to do if we're going to have baseball this year.
Don't forget, everybody, the Roy Halladay E60 debuts this Friday. So it's Memorial Day. It feels like a baseball day. And I know we've been talking about everything, Buster, but I really do. Do you have a favorite Memorial Day baseball story?
I do, Jason. When I was covering the Padres for the San Diego Union Tribune, I got to know Jerry Coleman, who is a longtime Padres broadcaster, who's passed away in recent years. But Jerry was one of two baseball players who served both in World War II and in Korea. The other was Ted Williams. He was very close friends with Ted Williams. They both flew for the Marines. He was a pilot. And I was around him so often when people would say, hey, Jerry, thank you for your service. And Jerry's answer was always the same. It was that, no, you don't need to thank me. I was just doing my job. The real heroes are those poor men and women who didn't make it back. And every time I heard him say that, there was a tinge of emotion in his voice, because, of course, he's, you know, has specific memories of people that he went to war with who didn't come back with him. And I always remember that every Memorial Day.
Yeah, that's a great story. And just a reminder of how much the world has changed and what's important today. It's not sports. It's something far bigger than that. Buster, thanks for, I needed your tag team help. I appreciate you giving us some time this morning. Have a great Memorial Day. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You too, Fitzy. Take care.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
It's a Memorial Day edition of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. You can just ask them to hang out with us. They'll make sure that happens. I'm Jason Fitz, in for all of Golic and Wingo. I'm in for Mike Jr. and Trey, and we're doing a fun thing today. We're having different, I've got different tag team partners. Every once in a while, somebody tags in, somebody tags out. Buster Olney started the show with us. He's now tagged out. Laura Rutledge joins us now. Laura, thanks so much for hanging out. Happy Memorial Day, my friend. How you doing?
I am tagging in. It's great to be with you.
Look, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We got to get to college football. You and I have a lot to talk about there. But first, I was mesmerized yesterday by the mic'd up approach for the golf event, obviously. And I kept watching it thinking, man, this is the sort of win that golf needs. To me, as I watched it, I kept thinking about personality and how much personality matters and how even in this event, not just for the golfers involved, not just for Tiger and Mickelson, but even for Justin Thomas, for example, on the broadcast, I felt like America got to sort of get a little peek behind the curtain on some of these guys. And the mic'd up personality of it was a huge win for the sport.
Yeah, because the thing is, these guys mostly have incredibly funny times with each other. I think about a few years ago when Bubba started doing those videos that were really funny dance videos, and everyone's like, wait, golfers are fun? What? And I get it that you can't always do that. Sometimes it's these intense moments and you want to make sure that you capture that. So I don't think that fans are asking for just all of this jovial fun all the time, but I think it's more that you did, to your point, get to see some personality. I wonder if we won't maybe see more of these guys be mic'd up every once in a while. It would be so cool, even if they just do it for part of a round or something like that. I think it's great. And just the trash talk between the guys is always so much fun. Obviously, yesterday was different because you got Peyton, you got Brady, and then, you know, Charles Barkley and all those guys. But even just amongst the golfers themselves, I think there's a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk usually. So I loved it. I also thought one of my favorite moments of the entire afternoon was when my husband, who is a terrible golfer, looked at me and said, I think I could take on Brady. And I just looked at him and said, all right, man, let's see if we can make that happen. It obviously will never happen, but it was so funny because I just think there was this relatability to the whole thing where everyone's like, oh man, you know what it's like to struggle. And then occasionally hit a really good shot, which most people couldn't do that anyway. That was GOAT status type stuff, but it was just so relatable, which I loved. And obviously the impact of being able to donate that many millions of dollars to COVID-19 relief efforts is just phenomenal.
Well, and you know, the funny thing is you mentioned your husband. We were having the debate this morning as we were putting the show together, and producer Evan was talking about how he watched it yesterday, and that's why he loves golf, and that's why he loves playing golf, because you can have a horrible round, but then hit one or two great shots. For me, I'm the opposite. That's why I don't want anything to do with golf. Like, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to commit to anything that I can't master to some level where I can at least be consistent. Like, I'm okay with being consistently bad or consistently good at something. I don't want something that kicks my butt. But back and forth, that would be maddeningly frustrating.
It keeps you coming back for more because you think, well, man, I might be able to do that again. And especially these guys, you got to think about this too. And I think this is why a lot of really elite athletes like to play golf, is because they just can't accept that they can't be consistently good at it. And some of them are, right? But I'm talking about the ones that maybe aren't, because golf is a very humbling game.
Well, it just felt like a massive win. You know, we talk about certain sports, and there's a line for every sport that's in general between your diehards and the casual that's just sort of coming in. We used to always say in the music business, like, how do you take a fan and make them a super fan? And how do you take somebody that's not a fan and make them just that first level of fan? I think that's the debate every sport's trying to figure out. Like, how do you get fans to come in the door and stick with you? And that, I think, was the biggest win yesterday for golf, because for a lot of people that just don't necessarily watch the events, they don't watch it the same way, they don't know the players the same way. It's why Buster and I were just talking about why Major League Baseball can learn from some of this too, in my mind, because anytime you want to see more personality, the easiest way to do it in today's world is to mic people up and give people some sort of behind the scenes look that gives them some peek behind the curtain into who people really are.
Yeah, and that's all people really want, right? We just want to see what's going on for real and give us a little taste of that. That's why I think, too, especially during this time, it is so crucial that Major League Baseball finds some way to agree on a safe parameter, some sort of safe plan like they've already proposed to come back and not get hung up on money. I just think that would be detrimental. But at this point, if they can figure out a way to come back during these times, they might gain a whole new fan base, especially a younger one that they don't have right now.
It's Go Look and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. I'm Jason Fitz sitting in for the guys, and Laura Rutledge, my co-host at this point. It's going to change throughout the course of the morning, so I have to always follow
this.
Yeah, this is, we're just flying by the seat of our pants at this point, Laura.
Fine.
So you've been around so many college football coaches, and you know them so well. If you could mic up any two coaches in a game, like you got one game where I get to mic up both sidelines, who are you going for?
Oh, man.
I'm putting you on the spot.
So hard.
Laura didn't know I was going to ask her this.
So. No, listen, there are so many that I threw out there. I think the obvious one that a lot of people would say would be like a Nick Saban or something, and that would be interesting. But I would actually say Will Muschamp. He is obviously angry sometimes on the sideline, and I think it's part of his intensity. Maybe intense is a better word than anger. But he is so interesting from the defensive standpoint and just from a head coach standpoint anyway. So I would say him. And then I would say Chip Kelly. I really want to know what he's like in the college world. We obviously know what he's like at the NFL level, not that we ever had him mic'd up there, and he's been at UCLA for a couple years now, but I'd love to see him coach a college game where I could hear what he was saying. I think that'd be really, really interesting. I tell you what really will be fascinating is if we are seeing football without fans in some way, shape, or form, I wonder how much you'll be able to hear. Like, they can't, I almost wonder if you will be able to hear some of this to where you don't even have to mic people up or how they will handle that. Because if you imagine a football stadium with no fans in it, it's going to be awfully quiet, and you might hear some things that maybe you weren't supposed to. That's why I think if we do see that, and who knows, and it sounds like it might be more likely at the NFL level, maybe not even, maybe they'll be able to social distance fans. But if we do see that, you wonder if they would just start pumping in some crowd noise just so we can't hear what's happening on the sideline.
Oh, my God. That's so true. It's time for some Straight Talk, by the way, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Again, if you ever need just a reminder that Laura's more professional, she went with opportunities to learn and listen and really get insight. I totally go with, like, Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach. I just want to hear the two of them mic'd up during a game and see what that comes out. But it'd have to be on delay because, my God, the language. But you mentioned if we get college football, and this is sort of a difficult one for me, because I was squarely a week ago today, I was squarely on the hill that you can't make players do anything that the rest of the student body isn't doing. I mean, they don't have a union. They don't have a way to protect themselves. I don't think we should be putting college football players at risk just because they play college football. So in my mind, it was very simple. And then last week, ESPN.com puts out the article showing $4 billion worth of losses and $62 million per school in the Power Five on average. And you know, there's not the money to handle these losses. And I guess I walked away at the end of the week, Laura, a little shook, because as much as I think we can't put anybody in a position of risk, I also have to look at the money side of it, which, you know, I don't have any skin in that game. But for people that do, I mean, that's a catastrophic sport-ending sort of loss for many programs across the country.
Yeah, and that's why, this thing continues to be so incredibly complicated. And I think what we saw toward the end of last week was a lot of optimism with the votes that happened in various conferences, decisions that happened by the presidents that said, hey, look, we're going to at least allow these schools to start talking about bringing students and student athletes back on campus. And as it relates specifically to this, we're talking about student athletes. And I think what that was at least a step toward seeing how this whole thing goes. And there are these massive screening and testing plans and all these things that are going to have to be followed to the book for this to work, basically, for lack of a better way to put it. Everyone's got to be committed to it. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is this weird no man's land that a lot of these coaches, a lot of these athletic directors, even conference commissioners are stuck in, because while they don't want to put their players at risk, and maybe bringing a bunch of people from various parts of the country back into one place could be riskier than the alternative, a lot of them are worried about not being able to monitor their players and not being able to give them the care that they might need. And you hear people all over the place on that. You know, the NCAA's health plans actually do apply when players are not on campus. So let's say that somebody were to contract COVID-19, a player that is somewhere else, they could still be provided with the health care and the costs that might be, you know, incurred would be taken care of. But still, a lot of these coaches look at it and say, no, I need my guys there to where I can help them in some way, shape, or form. And then there's that whole thing about, well, getting prepared for whatever football season might happen. And so it's just this very odd world that they're all operating in. But I think what we did see is that with the decisions that have been made, now at least there's a game plan for these guys as far as what's the next step. So now the next step is trying to get these guys back in the gyms, trying to get them, you know, in. We're going to see 10 athletes at a time in. Then they're going to clean the entire thing, then bring a new 10 in. It's just going to be a totally different world. But for them, it is some sort of roadmap toward preparing for a college football season. And I think that's what we'll see this year. I mean, I think we will see college football. I think it will happen in the fall, as of right now, unless there are no other setbacks. And you know, I mean, initially this level of optimism was not present, but now it seems as though they're sort of barreling full steam ahead.
Well, and with that being said, Greg Byrne, Alabama athletic director, was on Best Week Ever and talked specifically about what happens if someone tests positive. This is what he said.
Communication is going to have to be a key part of that. The few people that are back in the office right now, we are screening every single day, doing symptoms, checking temperatures. Those will continue, I think, for the foreseeable future. And then on top of that, as the testing increases, you know, I think you're going to see the number of cases probably go up as just mm-hmm. as you have the opportunity to test more people. But we'll also be able to see if somebody maybe have had it before too through some of the other tests. So. We absolutely have developed policies and what we want to do with that. And at the same time, too, it'll continue to evolve just like everything else does with this.
So with that being said, it's Cool Looking We Go on ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. Jason Fitz in for the guys, hanging out with Laura Rutledge. Everything he just said where he used the word we, what's difficult for me, Laura, is the word we means we as in the University of Alabama. What I can't wrap my head around is every college in the country being comfortable at the same level, at the same time, at the same rate. So if the NCAA has already come out, as they have, and said essentially they're not going to mandate any one level of return, there's a real situation here where we could be looking at some colleges that want to play and some colleges that don't want to play. And while I respect each school's right to make that decision, what I can't figure out is what that really means for however they try to crown a champion. I mean, that it seems weird to come in and say, well, James Franklin at Penn State has made it apparent he wants to play. Okay, cool. What about the rest of his conference? How do you have conference champions? How do you have national champions when we may have a large group of schools that just decide they're not willing to play?
Yeah, and that is, I mean, look, that's a possibility. You know, you even heard the Michigan president coming out and saying that he's not comfortable with football being played if it's not safe to have students back on campus. And so here we are once again in this topsy-turvy capsule that just keeps floating around. I mean, everyone's trying to figure out what to do. And I think what you will see is, you know, probably, and look, even the SEC vote that happened on Friday. They were not all on the same page. They ended up getting to what I was told was called a positive place together, but they were not there initially. There are so many differing opinions here, and Vanderbilt even, as you probably know, has not totally agreed to all of this. And so there are, even within conferences, to your point, so many differing opinions. And I think what really becomes interesting is, you know, look, they're going to play the college football playoff in some way, shape, or form. And so that's a whole other can of worms that, you know, do we value that championship as much as others? I think that's a debate that's sort of a larger sports debate. But what I think is interesting is if you're at a school that decides not to play, let's say it's, you know, I don't even want to name a school because I don't want to get somebody saying that I'm saying they're not going to play. But let's say you're at that school and then you're saying, well, I want to play and I'm a guy that, you know, I'm trying to get drafted. I'm a senior. I don't have another chance. Maybe I don't want a red shirt. Maybe I want to play right now. Well, then what happens with transferring potentially in the transfer portal? And I have thrown this at many decision makers at the college football level and high level decision makers. And everyone's like, ooh, man, that would be crazy, but it's being discussed. And so I think it's something that will come to the forefront if you don't see all of these schools be able to start and be able to play at least somewhere around the same time. And that's what really gets interesting. I mean, do you see some sort of like mass exodus from some school or from some conference that, you know, just at least allows these guys opportunity to play? I would hate to see, you know, if somebody wants to play, I mean, it's kind of on both sides. I would hate to see if somebody didn't want to play, be forced to play, which look, they can't be. They would just make their own decision and say, I'm not going to play and I'm not comfortable with this. And then scholarships would have to be honored. But on the other side, if somebody wants to play and is being told, well, I can't play because I can't transfer to some other school, I don't like that either. That's not fair to the student athlete. At the end of the day, it just feels like, doesn't it, that, you know, as usual, these big universities are going to win here and, you know, not that it's some sort of battle. They're all trying to work together to do what's right, but I just would hate to see student athletes suffer anymore as a result of all this.
Well, and the other layer of this, and you know, it's funny when it initially happened and winter sports were canceled and spring sports were canceled and those scholarships were then the NCAA gave schools the option to honor those scholarships. I asked at the time several people, well, what happens if this affects college football? I mean, if there's no college football season, are we going to just honor scholarships going through like that? The finances of that would be an absolute burden. At the time, people sort of laughed about it. But these are the things that I think the NCAA has to figure out. I mean, I don't think anybody understood in spring when they were trying to figure out what to do for spring sports that they may be setting a precedent for fall sports, which is a much bigger scholarship count to try and figure out what to do with. That's why none of this is, to your point, none of this is simple. And you mentioned University of Football or University of Michigan football, and that's the quote was, if there is no on-campus instruction, and there won't be intercollegiate athletics, at least for Michigan, that's according to their school president. He said he had, quote, some degree of doubt as to whether there will be college athletics anywhere, at least in the fall. So as he comes in and looks at that, and again, I have to respect where that's coming from because I don't want athletes to be put in a situation of risk simply because they're a student athlete, Laura. But the other side of it is that speaks to my point. Michigan might decide that they're uncomfortable and Alabama might decide that they are very comfortable. And through it all, feels like money's going to have a lot to do with it. And then we're going to have to figure out as a college football community covering it, how to even clarify a champion in a season where we may have half the college football teams not competing.
Yeah, you know what gets really interesting too is some of those big time out of conference games that we've come to love so much, especially in this college football playoff era, the USC Alabama, the Oregon Ohio State. You wonder, are those sort of tabled? And everybody that I've talked to has said, no, those are still on the schedule. We're still doing that, but we don't know, you know, and I think that gets very complicated too. And one coach that I talked to, one college football coach said, look, there's no way to approach this without just accepting that there are going to be some schools that have unfair advantages even over others. And that's not even taking into account that just some may not be able to play or play at the same time. But even just the fact that, you know, in the next couple of weeks, we will see many of these SEC schools, many ACC schools, Louisville already has said they're opening back up as well. We're going to see them already be able to get their players back on campus. Then there are a variety of schools that won't have that, at least for the foreseeable future. And so but yet they may be in some position to try and play football in the fall, depending on what happens, depending on where the vaccine, situation is, where testing is. That's another thing too that college football, I think, is sensitive to. Last thing they want to do is be taking tests from civilians. And so they would obviously use a test on a symptomatic player or staff member, but that's the whole thing with all of this is, you know, there are a lot of people that are carrying the virus that don't show symptoms. And that's where I think all of it gets complicated. The other big thing, and the Michigan president actually has a background as an immunologist. There is a big fear amongst those who are worried about this in college football that there would be a resurgence of the virus sometime in the fall and they would have to stop the season. And so I think that's where a lot of the concern from those who are concerned, it's now become there are the people who are concerned and the people who are not. You know, like that seems to be how college football is right this second, right? It may change, but the decision makers who are concerned and the leadership that's concerned, that is where their concern, one of the big places where their concern lies.
And that is Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise from Laura Rutledge. And, you know, Laura, all I can speak to is living so much of my life in Connecticut and Tennessee, you know, going back and forth during this pandemic, driving back and forth so that I'm socially distanced and very responsible. I've learned that there are different areas of the country that are handling all of this much differently, and we're getting new information every single day. So I can't hold them to a different standard. Laura, you are the best. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. You've got a busy, busy day. You can check Laura out on Get Up, obviously, and you can also check Laura out on First Take today. So you're cramming it in. Thanks for giving us some time.
You and I are filling in today with the best of them, and it's great to fill in with you.
You're the best, Laura. We appreciate it. Go Luka Wingo, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. We'll keep the Straight Talk coming to you. A bevy of co-hosts today on this Memorial Day edition of the show, having a little bit of fun, getting you all over the sports world with a lot of different perspectives from some of our best experts. They're all tagging in and helping me out.